Hello, it's Holocaust Memorial Day, January 27, 2008, and I'm Eric Hufschmid. In my previous audio file, I criticized the liberals, the working class, the Democrats. So this time, I'll mention some of the problems I see with the conservatives, the Republicans, and the businessmen. We've all had history courses in school, but they don't provide a very useful view of history. The people who write history books are more concerned with making us memorize facts and figures. History classes would be more useful if they showed us how people lived at different periods of time, because by watching how people's lives changed through the centuries, we can get a better understanding of how our problems developed and why the world became what it is today. It would also be useful to see how life was different for different societies, because that can give us some ideas on what we might like to experiment with. So let's consider how the business environment has changed since the Middle Ages. Of course, life during the Middle Ages was different for different areas of the world, and even for different villages in the same area, but I only want to point out some of the significant changes in business activity, so we don't need to worry about the details. Most men in the Middle Ages were farmers, and most women worked at home. Only a small percentage of the population were business owners or employees. Most of the businesses were very small. Some didn't have any employees. Some were family businesses. Some had a few employees, but only a few were large enough to need dozens of employees. Most of the men who created businesses were men with skills. Some men made shoes, some made farming tools, and some made leather. If a man didn't have a skill, it would have been difficult for him to be successful in business because there weren't many other business opportunities. There weren't many retail stores, art galleries, investment companies, strip clubs, psychologists, marriage counselors, gambling casinos, financial advisors, or advertising companies. This brings up the first point I want to make. The men who operated businesses centuries ago would have been admired and respected by the other people. They were not parasites who were looking for a way to get rich from other people's hard work. They were contributing something of value to society, and their efforts would have been appreciated. Some men would have been jealous of the business owners, but they wouldn't have had that bitter attitude that we see today in which they accuse the business owners of abusing the working class. There was some resentment towards the kings and queens and other government officials, but those people were not business owners. They were the ruling class. It might help you to understand how the economy and people's attitudes have changed if you imagine if you had been living in a small medieval village in Europe and that you decided to start a small bakery business. So let's assume you live in a house in the Middle Ages and you have an extra room that you decide to convert to a bakery. What are you going to put into that room? You couldn't look through a catalog of restaurant equipment and order high-quality stainless steel ovens, electric mixing bowls, or packages of dehydrated yeast. Where do you get an oven? And where do you get a sink? And where do you get water for your sink? You don't have access to city water or plumbing, and you don't have a sewer or a septic tank, so what do you do with the wastewater from the sink? The ovens in that era were crude devices made of clay or brick, and they burned wood or coal. There weren't any factories producing industrial ovens for businesses, and there weren't any good transportation devices to transport the ovens, even if there was a factory to make them. So you would have to build your own oven out of clay and bricks. After you build an oven, how do you light a fire in the oven? There weren't any matches in that era. There weren't any thermometers either, so you would never know the temperature inside the oven. There weren't any clocks, other than sundials and other extremely crude devices, so you wouldn't be able to set a timer. The only practical way to determine when your bread was finished cooking is to frequently look into it and observe its appearance, or tap it with a stick and listen to the noise. You didn't have stainless steel or glass mixing bowls, and you didn't have stainless steel spoons or knives. All of the tools in that era were crude and handmade. If any of your tools broke or wore out, you couldn't order replacement parts by telephone and have them delivered. You didn't have access to packages of dehydrated yeast, So you had to keep a yeast culture growing. How do you keep a yeast culture growing in a crude container that's inside a building that doesn't have temperature control? Your business would be dependent upon supplies of grain, but supplies were not as dependable in the Middle Ages as they are today, and most of the grain available in Europe was rye and barley. Wheat was more expensive. If there was a bad harvest, you would have to be able to adapt to whatever is available. You would also have to decide on whether you want to grind your own grain or find somebody who can supply you with flour. In that era, bread was made from whole grain, as opposed to the highly processed, nutritionally worthless white flour that we have today. However, as soon as grain is ground into flour, it starts to deteriorate, so you would have to use it quickly. Therefore, if you purchased flour, that means you had to make sure that you were getting fresh flour. But how do you determine the quality of whole grain flour? The best thing for you to do is to grind your own grain into flour as you need it. But how do you grind grain in that primitive era? Nobody today considers a person talented if all he can do is bake bread. But during the Middle Ages, a baker, a tailor, and most other businessmen were considered skilled craftsmen. By imagining yourself trying to start a bakery business in the Middle Ages, you should be able to realize that it would be so complicated that you would have to become an apprentice for a baker who's already learned how to do it. So let's assume that you spent a few years as an apprentice, and now you have your own bakery business. One of the significant differences between business activity in the Middle Ages compared to today is that most of your customers would have been your relatives, friends, and neighbors. Only rarely would a stranger come into your shop. Strangers were a novelty in most areas of the world, not a common occurrence. Instead of ignoring strangers, you would likely ask them who they are and where they live, and whether they're just passing through or moving into the area. The only transportation in that era were animals, but it wasn't practical for people to use animals as a daily transportation device, so most people walked. This had a significant effect on the economy compared to today. People today regularly travel long distances to go shopping, and many people commute enormous distances to their job. But centuries ago, people would shop and work at businesses within a short walking distance of their home. Only rarely would people travel long distances to purchase products. Even the people who had horses would avoid traveling long distances on a regular basis. Today, neighbors can live next to each other for years without any contact. But during the Middle Ages, people would frequently encounter their neighbors as they walked around their neighborhood, and business owners and their customers would get to know each other. Children growing up in these neighborhoods would get to know their neighbors also. Another significant difference is that most people spent their entire lives in one small area. The result was that most people knew most of their neighbors, and many of the people in a neighborhood were related to each other. This caused the neighborhoods to be considerably more friendly compared to today, in which we're surrounded by strangers, and sometimes by people who speak a different language. The friendly environment meant that your bakery business wasn't merely a source of income to you. You wouldn't be going to work each day merely to collect money. Instead, you would be baking bread for people you personally knew. You would have an emotional attachment to some of your customers. You would look forward to seeing them come into your shop. They wouldn't be just a source of money. You would often socialize with your customers, and if you had an employee, he would also occasionally talk with the customers. You wouldn't reprimand your employee for talking and tell him to get back to work. Furthermore, your customers would have appreciated you and your bread much more than people appreciate business owners and their products today. Nobody today cares about a loaf of bread or a man who can bake. Actually, we have access to so much food and material items that we often waste a lot of it. People today don't appreciate much of anything. But most of the products for sale in the Middle Ages were valuable, not frivolous. The bread in that era, for example, was made with whole grain, so it was a real food that people appreciated. The men who made shoes, clothing, and tools were also making products that people actually wanted. Only a small percentage of the products in that era were frivolous, such as shoes with long pointed toes. When there was a wedding in your neighborhood, you might be asked to bake bread for the wedding, and you might know some of the people at the wedding, and you might be invited to the wedding. Therefore, as you were baking bread for the wedding, the vision of the wedding and the people would be in your mind. You wouldn't simply be creating a product for money. You would be contributing something of value to the wedding. Your business would be a source of pride for you, and the people in your neighborhood would be proud of you. You would receive emotional satisfaction from your business that most people today never experience. Another significant difference with business activity during the Middle Ages is that almost all of your time would be spent on productive work related to your business, and almost none of your time would be wasted on accounting or government paperwork. A lot of people in that era didn't read or write, and paper was considerably more expensive, and pens were difficult to use. It would have been impractical for the government to expect businesses to produce lots of paperwork. Finding employees in that era would also be different. Since people didn't commute long distances to their jobs, the only people who would be interested in working for you would be people who lived in your local area. Newspapers were not very common, and a lot of people didn't read, so instead of running advertisements in newspapers, you would tell people in your area that a job was available. There wouldn't be any government regulations for you to worry about, so you could hire whoever you pleased. And you wouldn't have to justify your decision to anybody. You might offer a teenage boy the opportunity to become your apprentice, or you might offer a job to a friend or relative. The competition between businesses was also different compared to today. One difference is that your competitors would be very similar to you. Specifically, they would be individual men, not gigantic international corporations. Therefore, the competition would be much more fair. Also, even if your competitor was slightly better at baking bread, you would be able to remain in business simply because a lot of your customers are your friends and relatives, and many of your customers would not want to walk all the way to his shop simply to get a slightly better loaf of bread. You would have to be significantly worse than your competition in order for your business to fail. The competition between businesses many centuries ago was similar to the competition that we see today with sports teams. When a football team loses a game, they don't have to give up football. Instead, they play another game. And if they lose that game, they're still allowed to play again. An athlete has to be significantly worse than the others in order to be pushed out of the game. Likewise, your bakery business would survive even if your competition was slightly better. You would lose some of your customers, but you would remain in business and be able to try again the next day. Your reaction to the competition would be similar to what we see with athletes. Specifically, you would react by trying to do a better job. The competition would inspire you to make sure that your equipment is in good working condition, that your bread is cooked properly, and that your ingredients are good quality. The men who were successful in business centuries ago would have had personalities similar to what we see with athletes today. They would have enjoyed the competition, not been afraid of it. The free enterprise system is very useful for primitive societies because people can use the system without any understanding of economics, and they don't need a government to supervise it. It's a self-regulating system. However, it has always suffered from certain problems, and the problems are becoming more serious as technology improves. Free enterprise is similar to a sports event, and businessmen are similar to athletes. Both sports events and business activity suffer from some of the same problems. For example, cheating. Businessmen and athletes are supposed to compete with each other in a respectable manner. The competition is supposed to inspire them to do a better job. Unfortunately, there are differences between our personalities. At one extreme are the men who are willing to play fair, and at the other extreme are the men who are willing to kill their competitors. Most men are in between these two extremes. Athletes deal with cheating by having referees and by testing for drug use. The athletes of the more violent games, such as hockey, will attack an athlete who cheats too much. The referees can't prevent cheating, but they can reduce it to tolerable levels. Unfortunately, we can't put referees into an economy. People in the Middle Ages dealt with dishonest businessmen in the same manner that we do today, namely, by punishing the dishonest businessmen. However, in that era, many of the punishments were intended to embarrass criminals rather than hurt them. For example, a baker who cheated his customers might be tied to a chair and dunked into water, or he might be tied to a sled with a loaf of bread around his neck and dragged through the streets. These punishments were conducted in public partly because of their entertainment value, and partly to show other businessmen that they better behave. The concern of being punished is what caused the expression "a baker's dozen" to mean 13 rather than 12. When somebody purchased a dozen loaves of bread, some bakers would give him 13 just to make sure that he wouldn't complain that he was being cheated. Unfortunately, embarrassing dishonest businessmen did not stop them from committing crimes. Other methods were tried, such as jail, beatings, and even death, but no society has yet figured out how to stop businessmen from cheating. Actually, crime has been growing worse through the centuries, despite all the punishments, because as technology advanced, it caused business activity to become more common and more complex. And this in turn provides us with more opportunities to cheat. And more people are taking those opportunities. Today we have thousands of laws and lots of jails and punishments, but we're not stopping businessmen from cheating. This brings me to a major philosophical difference between me and most of the human population. I have a very different view on crime. I don't think crime is coming from ignorance, poverty, the devil, or discrimination. I think it's entirely due to the human mind. People who commit crimes have chosen to do so. Just look at yourself closely. When you're hungry and you see food, your emotions want you to grab at it and eat it. When you see money, your emotions want you to grab at that. When you see a pretty woman, your emotions want you to grab at her. These animal-like emotions are in all of us. If any of us were to do exactly what our emotions wanted, we would behave just like an animal. Of course, no human does exactly what his emotions crave, except perhaps retarded people. All of us have some self-control. However, some people have better control than others, and it doesn't seem to have anything to do with intelligence. Also, adults have more self-control than children. The people with less self-control over their emotions often behave in manners that the rest of us regard as irrational, crude, childish, selfish, or animal-like. The common assumption is that we can correct this animal-like behavior with punishments. My attitude is that we can't stop this behavior with punishments because it's coming from the way the person's mind has been designed. Some people's behavior has improved through medications or insulin, and this is evidence that their bad behavior is coming from inside their mind. The human mind is a biological computer, so if your body is not controlling its blood chemistry properly, or if your brain hasn't been designed properly, your thoughts and your behavior will be abnormal. The current attitude towards badly behaved businessmen is that we can correct their behavior with punishments, but I say the only solution is what we see in sports events. When an athlete cannot behave properly, he's thrown out of the game and not allowed back in. We have to do the same with businessmen. When we find a businessman who behaves badly, we should remove him from the economic game and never allow him to play again. If the only men involved in business were the men who had better control of their emotions, then we wouldn't need to threaten them with punishments. They would behave properly because they wanted to. There is currently no concern about who becomes a businessman, and as a result, we end up with a lot of selfish, childish, and neurotic people in business. However, these badly behaved businessmen are not randomly distributed in the economy. They tend to collect in certain areas. Since these men have trouble controlling their emotions, they're more attracted to businesses that offer the greatest emotional titillation. For example, they're attracted to gambling, strip clubs, Hollywood, and prostitution. They're also attracted to businesses that offer them the opportunity to make lots of money, such as investments and sales. Once again, this brings up the philosophical difference between me and most of the human population. I believe that the owners of gambling casinos and strip clubs tend to be badly behaved because badly behaved people are attracted to those type of businesses. I don't think those businesses transformed wonderful people into animals. My theory would explain why there's so much crime and abuse in the financial businesses. Have you heard of Patrick Byrne of Overstock.com explain the cheating in the stock market that he's personally seen? And I'm sure you've heard about the Frenchman who just lost billions of dollars for his bank. I suspect that he was working for the banking families or some faction within the Zionist network. But regardless of why he was making those transactions, the point I'm trying to make is that people in the financial businesses are always committing crimes and behaving in selfish manners. By the way, if that Frenchman was trying to make money or manipulate the stock market for a group of Zionist Jews, you have to wonder what those Jews are going to do now that he failed. There were also investors who made millions of dollars because they knew the September 11th attack was about to occur. I suspect that some of those people were tricked by the Zionists into investing so that the Zionists could then blackmail them after they discovered what they had helped the Zionists do. But again, my point is that the financial markets are full of crime. We don't see such high levels of selfish behavior among carpenters or engineers or dentists. We don't see the engineers who design jet engines commit as many crimes and abuse their customers as often as the people in the financial businesses. And why don't the people in the financial markets seem to care about this crime? Why don't they complain that they want their business cleaned up? I say it's because the financial businesses attract these childish, selfish, animal-like people. There weren't many investment opportunities centuries ago, and most of those investments required people to leave their money with a company for a long period of time. But today, people are allowed to conduct investments that don't make any sense from an economic point of view. For example, people can buy a stock in the morning and sell it in the afternoon. That is not investing in a company. That is trying to make money without doing any work. The same is true of people who buy gold or copper. They're not helping the economy. They're trying to become wealthy parasites. The financial businesses offer us the opportunity to make a lot of money without doing any work, so it attracts people who have no interest in contributing to society or learning a useful skill. It attracts the people who want money and who don't care how they get it. It attracts the animal-like and selfish people. We're not going to improve the financial businesses by creating more laws or government agencies. We've got to make changes to our economy in order to remove the opportunities for people to become parasites. And we've got to change our attitude towards investing. The current attitude is that somebody who makes millions of dollars in the stock market is a genius. But our attitude should be that he's a parasite. Everybody should contribute to society. Women need to change their attitude also. When they look for a husband, they don't care whether a man is responsible or honest or contributing to society. They only care how much money he has and whether he's famous. Most women are behaving just like the female animals that throw themselves on whichever male happens to be dominant. My attitude is that the problems of the human world are coming from the human mind, not from the devil or poverty or a shortage of oil or a lack of technology. My attitude is that we'll improve business activity, governments, and schools when we put better people in control. But how do we select better people? How do we determine who among us belongs in a position of importance? Sports events have this same problem. All sports teams have to make a decision on who becomes a member of their team. People are arrogant, so if a football team allowed a person to join the team simply because he believed he has the talent, then every football team would have thousands of members. We cannot let people decide for themselves whether they deserve to be an athlete. Somehow, we must make decisions on which of the arrogant people truly has the talent to become an athlete. Football teams solve this problem by letting coaches determine who becomes a member. Unfortunately, the free enterprise system that we use today doesn't have anything analogous to a coach. Nobody is making decisions on who among us becomes a businessman. Our economy is truly a free-for-all. Anybody can start a business, regardless of their age, education, or mental health. Nobody has to qualify. According to the theory of our free enterprise system, the incompetent and dishonest businessman will be driven out of business because consumers will realize that his competitor is doing a better job. However, businessmen noticed centuries ago that this theory was false. They noticed that their own customers couldn't always make good decisions simply because they didn't know enough about the products. For example, the blacksmiths noticed that their customers needed assistance in selecting products because most people don't know enough about metal. The blacksmiths also noticed that some dishonest blacksmiths were taking advantage of naive customers. The blacksmiths realized that the people best able to judge their products were other blacksmiths, and the people who make leather products realized that they were the best people to judge leather products. In order to help consumers make better decisions and reduce the number of incompetent and dishonest businessmen, the men with skills formed organizations called trade guilds. These trade guilds were similar to coaches and referees of a football game. For example, the guild for blacksmiths would ensure that anybody who wants to become a blacksmith must first go through an apprentice program. The purpose was to prevent incompetent people from referring to themselves as blacksmiths. The guilds would also prevent people from charging excessive prices. They wanted their profession to be honest and respectable. As technology advanced through the centuries, products became more complex, and transportation devices allowed people to sell products outside of their local area. The end result was that every century, consumers needed more help in making decisions about which products to purchase. Technology also caused businesses to grow larger, and it allowed more business opportunities. And this caused the problem of dishonest and incompetent businessmen to become worse. The trade guilds became increasingly less effective in supervising such a large and complex economy. By the 1800s, the problem of incompetent and dishonest businesses was becoming serious. The example that may be the easiest to understand are the worthless medical products that became widely available during the 1800s. People have been producing worthless medical products for thousands of years, but in primitive societies, most of those products were attempts to help people, not cheat them. However, by the mid-1800s, technology allowed businesses to exploit consumers on a very large scale. Technology allowed businesses to produce large amounts of products, and the increase in magazines and newspapers made it easy to advertise products. And the improvements in transportation devices allowed products to be shipped all over the world. If all businessmen were honest and respectable, they would have used this technology for beneficial purposes. However, many people realized that this new technology gave them an opportunity to exploit people and become wealthy, and they took that opportunity. These selfish men realized that they could sell worthless medical products far away from their home, so they didn't have to worry about angry customers walking over to their business to get revenge. Besides, by the mid-1800s, citizens were prohibited from dealing with criminals. The police and courts were supposed to deal with crime. This is another change that could have been beneficial, but many businessmen took advantage of the situation by bribing policemen, lawyers, judges, and government officials. Some businessmen also formed relationships with one another, creating organized crime gangs. The end result was that by the mid-1800s, the exploitation and abuse of citizens was becoming a serious problem. In addition to producing worthless medical products, some businessmen were abusing their own employees, and some were abusing children, and some were abusing other races of people or other nations, and some were cheating other businessmen in order to create monopolies. America's railroad industry suffered tremendously as a result of their selfish behavior. The Food and Drug Administration developed in response to the deceptive and dangerous medical products, and unions developed in response to the abuse of employees, and other government agencies, laws, and consumer groups developed in response to other types of cheating. Unfortunately, these agencies, laws, and other organizations never solved the problem. I say it's because these problems are not due to a lack of laws or agencies. They're due to the minds of the people. A businessman who cheats is doing so because he made a decision to cheat. He could have treated people with decency, and he could have chosen to contribute something of value to society, but he didn't want to. We have to stop making excuses for bad behavior and start realizing that people are responsible for what they do. Businessmen who cheat made a decision to cheat. We're not going to transform them into honest humans by creating a government agency that threatens them with punishments. And we're not going to fix their mental disorders with a labor union. Actually, the labor unions have also become corrupt. This is not because of a lack of laws. Rather, it's because the men who struggle to get control of a labor union are trying to satisfy their animal urges for dominance. They're not thinking of how to make society a better place. And some of them are involved with organized crime, such as Zionism. The government agencies are also becoming dominated by selfish people. The FDA may have originally consisted of honest men who wanted to help society, but it has since become an organized crime gang. If you think I'm exaggerating, take a look at what I wrote about the FDA's suppression of stevia and hemp. The FDA is not trying to help us. They're trying to help their selfish friends in the wood pulp, sugar, and artificial sweetener business. But that's enough about crime for a while. Let's move to the issues that have nothing to do with crime or bad behavior. Let's look at some of the changes in our economy that are due to advances in technology. For example, business activity today can no longer be considered fair. Centuries ago, a businessman competed with other men who were similar to him and who lived in his local area. But today, businesses have to compete with mail order companies and other businesses all over the world, and some of them are gigantic corporations. Not only is it unfair to expect an individual to compete against a corporation, but we should also wonder if these type of changes are improving our lives. A good example is the issue of bread. From an economic point of view, it's most efficient to let giant corporations produce nutritionally worthless bread at giant factories and then ship the bread to retail stores. But how does this improve life compared to people in the Middle Ages who could walk a short distance and purchase fresh bread from a local shop? The best tasting and most nutritious bread will come from tiny local bakeries who grind their own flour and make fresh bread. But those type of bakeries cannot survive the competition today. We would have to make changes to our economy to allow such an inefficient bakery to survive. This brings up the issue of whether we want our economy to be designed for profit, or whether we should deliberately allow some inefficient business activities simply because we enjoy them. The free enterprise system that we use today was designed to make a struggle for profits. This concept may have made some sense in the Middle Ages, but it's absurd today. We have so much material wealth today that we don't have to worry about profits or efficiency. We can easily sacrifice some efficiency in order to make our lives more pleasurable. For example, we can design cities so that we have the ability to easily walk to local stores and restaurants for fresh food. And we can design our cities to have more parks and gardens. And we can design our economy so that mothers have time to raise their children. We have the technology and material wealth to make beautiful cities with attractive buildings. And we could easily afford to surround the buildings with gardens and parks and covered walkways. We can easily afford to provide every city with farms so that everybody has fresh food. We don't have to devote our lives to maximizing corporate profits. Unfortunately, the men who are dominating our economy are like children in a candy shop who want every piece of candy that they see. They're like animals who struggle to become the dominant male and feel special. All they think about is acquiring money and feeling important. The rest of us should be asking ourselves, why are we living? Is it merely to make lots of money and then buy a gigantic house and stockpile material items? Do we really want these childish, animal-like, selfish businessmen in control of our economy? Is this really the best that we can do? Another problem with our economy that has nothing to do with bad behavior or crime is that products today have become so technically advanced that consumers can't make decisions on which products to purchase. And there are so many products available that even if somebody was an all-knowing expert on every product, nobody has the time to analyze all of the different products and businesses. Our economy was designed under the assumption that consumers will make wise decisions about which products to purchase and which businesses to support. But it was obvious during the Middle Ages that consumers could not make good decisions about products and services, and this problem has been getting worse through the centuries, not better. People today are so overwhelmed with the choices that almost every time we decide to buy something, we first look for reviews of the product in magazines or on the internet, or we ask for advice from people we know. In response to this confusion, many organizations have developed to provide reviews of products. One of the largest organizations is Consumers Union. It publishes the magazine Consumer Reports. And there are so many people that want those reviews that their sales were over $200 million in 2007. The analysis of products has become a very large business, and it's going to get larger in the future. These product reviews help consumers to make decisions, but they do nothing to eliminate the problem. The people at Consumers Union are treating the symptoms, not the problem. It would be better for us to redesign the economy to reduce this problem. Consider the products related to the health field to understand this concept. There are thousands of businesses offering us thousands of health-related products, such as drugs, vitamins, health foods, weight loss pills, and exercise equipment. Which of these products actually do something to help us? And which of those businessmen are truly trying to help us? And which of them are deliberately cheating us? And of the businessmen who are trying to help us, which of them are too incompetent to help? Consumers Union and the other groups are doing nothing to help us understand the products related to health. And how can they? They're not medical researchers. The people at Consumers Union can tell us if a particular cold remedy or vitamin pill or exercise equipment is what the manufacturer claims it is, but they can't tell us if it has any value to us. In 2006, Consumers Union analyzed three varieties of Oreo cookies. They can determine if the manufacturer is honest about the ingredients, but Consumers Union can't tell us if those cookies are harming our health, have no effect on our health, or are improving our health. And Consumers Union never deals with the issue of whether we want cookies to be made by a giant factory and then shipped to us, or whether we should redesign our society so that we have tiny bakeries, markets, and restaurants in our local area to provide us with fresh food. We don't need Consumers Union to analyze cookies. We need to start asking ourselves, why are we living? Why do we go to work each day? What are we trying to accomplish with our lives? Are we merely existing from one day to the next in order to provide corporate profits? The only people who could possibly help us with health issues are scientists. But unfortunately, scientists who work for these selfish, animal-like businessmen are under pressure to make the business a profit, so we can't trust them. And the scientists who work for universities and government agencies are following orders from the Zionist crime network, so we can't trust them either. Furthermore, how do we know we can trust Consumers Union or other private businesses that help us make decisions about products? They claim to be honest, but so does Mike Wallace of CBS News. And all of the 9/11 truth groups claim to be honest. And so do all of the political parties. And so do the anti-war groups and the veterans groups. Considering that there are thousands of Zionist Jews trying to manipulate us, we should wonder if the groups that offer to help us make decisions with products are also Zionist organizations. An example are the companies that claim to help public schools and libraries determine which videos and books to bring into their library. There's a company called Library Video Company that was created by a Jew named Arthur Schlesinger. He distributes educational videos and audiobooks to schools and public libraries around America. He also provides reviews and suggestions so that libraries can make decisions on what to put into their library. However, he won't provide a review of my video or anything else that exposes Zionist crimes. Why should public libraries look to Andrew Schlesinger for guidance on what videos to put into their library? Considering how many Jews are involved with 9/11, the Holocaust hoax, and other crimes, we're fools to let Jews influence our schools or libraries. We're also fools to let Zionists influence our view on art. The trash that we refer to as modern art seems to be an attempt by Zionists to ruin our society and our attitudes. Some people will certainly complain that I have no right to describe somebody's art as trash, but there is a way to determine what is art and what is trash. All we have to do is mix the art with some trash and see if anybody notices that there is art among the trash. Let's define art as any object that we use as a decoration. Art will remain art regardless of where it's located and what its environment is. For example, the paintings by Michelangelo are art regardless of whether they're on a ceiling or hanging on your bedroom wall or in a city park. The location doesn't change the fact that those paintings are attractive to most people. So, one way to determine if something is art is to mix the item with some trash. If the item is truly art, then the people will be shocked when they notice that there is some beautiful art mixed in with the trash. And their reaction will be to pull the art out of the trash, wipe off the dirt, and take it home for use as a decoration. But if the item was trash, then nobody will notice it because it will blend in with the rest of the trash. So imagine this experiment. You take all of the paintings and sculptures at your local art museum, put them in a truck, take them to the city dump, and then mix this art with the other trash. Then let people look through this pile of trash. People who don't know anything about art and who don't recognize any of the famous art will immediately recognize that Michelangelo's paintings are something special, and they'll want to pull them out from the pile of trash and take them home. But who among us will pull out any of the modern art? When you mix modern art with trash, it blends in and cannot be distinguished from the trash. This is proof that nobody is attracted to modern art because of the way it looks. Some people might pull out some of the modern art sculptures to use as scrap metal, but that's not art, that's scrap metal. This type of test can also be used to determine if a particular brand of food or wine is truly more appealing than a competing brand. Take an expensive wine that the wine connoisseurs give tremendous praise to and put it in a bottle that sells for a low price, and then let the wine connoisseurs taste it. If the connoisseurs don't recognize it as one of the finest wines ever produced, then it never was one of the finest wines. If you change the environment of an object and your perception of that object changes, that means your initial perception was inaccurate. This happens all the time to us because our view of the world is influenced by what other people are doing. Animals assume that the majority of animals are correct, and humans also have this tendency to follow one another. Businesses take advantage of these emotional characteristics by creating the impression that their particular product is desired by other people. When we see a lot of people admiring a particular food or art object, our natural tendency is to want that item so that we can join the other people. Some businesses are so diabolical that they pay people to pretend they're their customers in order to attract other people. We also have a craving to feel special and loved. Businesses take advantage of this by creating the impression that their product will make us a special person who is loved and admired. This is especially obvious with diamonds. Diamonds are actually worthless, except for certain industrial uses, and you can determine this with the test I mentioned earlier. Take the world's most fabulous diamonds and mix them in with a pile of low-cost imitation diamonds that are made of glass, cubic zirconia, plastic, and aluminum oxide. And then let people look at that pile, but don't tell them that there are diamonds in the pile. If people were truly attracted to diamonds, then those diamonds would stand out among the imitations like a Michelangelo painting in a pile of trash. but a diamond does not stand out when mixed with imitations. Even people who are experienced with diamonds have trouble separating diamonds from fake diamonds. This is proof that people are not attracted to diamonds. Rather, people have been fooled into thinking that if they have diamonds, then they're special people who are loved and admired. People who are attracted to diamonds are suckers who have fallen victim to a deceptive, abusive advertising campaign. Another problem with our economy today that isn't always the result of bad behavior is that some businesses are producing worthless products simply because they can make a profit from them. Our economy encourages us to make profit, but our economy never was designed to encourage us to ask ourselves, does this product have any value? Our economic system developed in an era when almost everything was in short supply, even food. Almost everybody 1,000 years ago was doing work that was truly valuable. But a lot of what we produce today is unnecessary. For example, lots of companies are producing products for pets. And most of those products have no value to the animals. Instead, the products are to entertain the lonely people who are using animals as substitutes for human friends. We could describe those products as frivolous, or useless, or worthless. And consider the millions of toys that are produced by China and other countries so that Americans can give toys to their children at Christmas and birthdays. I don't think those toys improve the life of a child. There are also lots of gifts that adults give one another as a joke. The toys and joke gifts are wasting resources, increasing pollution, and adding more plastic to our trash dumps. The people in China who are making these toys and gifts could be doing something more useful with their time. And consider the companies that hire people in India to make phone calls to Americans to sell us products and services that we don't need. During the past couple of weeks, I've been getting a lot of these phone calls. They're trying to sell me some type of credit report. I suppose they're doing this because a lot of Americans are having financial trouble right now. It's possible that these credit reports actually help some people, but this is an irritating and inefficient method of advertising the service. The people in India who are making these phone calls could be doing something more useful with their lives. The point I'm trying to make is that lots of businesses today produce products and services that have no real value. Frivolous products and services were an insignificant part of the economy 1,000 years ago. But today, people are so wealthy that we can easily afford to buy a product simply as a joke, and many people will buy toys for their children or pets without wondering if the toy has any value. Some of the businessmen who produce these worthless products are deliberately exploiting people, but some businessmen actually use the products themselves. For example, some of the businessmen who produce products for pets have pets of their own and use these products themselves. And some of the businessmen who produce toys don't think of themselves as exploiting people because they truly believe that their toys are helping the lives of children. Another product of questionable value are the poisons. There are poisons for weeds, cockroaches, spiders, rats, and other animals. Poisons certainly kill plants and animals, but it doesn't prevent them from coming back. And for all we know, these poisons are building up in the environment and part of the reason so many people today are sickly. Furthermore, insects, animals, and plants develop immunity to these poisons, so we have to constantly create new poisons. This brings up the issue of how do we determine which products we should offer consumers? According to our free enterprise system, businesses should give consumers whatever they desire. Unfortunately, when we design an economy to please consumers, we end up producing millions of Harry Potter books, thousands of gambling casinos, all sorts of poisons, and all sorts of other worthless or deceptive or dangerous products. Every product has a side effect, such as pollution. So before we produce a product, we should ask ourselves, what are the benefits and what are the disadvantages? Furthermore, when we produce one product, we deny the production of some other product. For example, producing a toy for children requires a lot of engineering work because the factories that produce these products are technically complex. The engineers, technicians, and construction workers that waste their time producing toys could be doing something more useful, such as developing better cities or train systems. and all of the resources that have been wasted on Harry Potter books and gambling casinos could have been put into something more useful. We shouldn't allow a businessman to produce a product simply because he can make a profit from it. Instead, we should be asking ourselves, why are we living? What do we want to do with our lives and the Earth's resources? Unfortunately, we can't pass judgment on which products to produce because our economy doesn't allow anybody to make such decisions. The only way we're going to take control of our future is to develop a more advanced economic system and move beyond this primitive system in which businesses compete only for profit. We also need to change our attitude on why businessmen behave in a dishonest or selfish manner. The current attitude is that bad behavior can be corrected by laws and regulations, but this doesn't correct bad behavior. Rather, it's adding a burden to people and businesses. For those of you who are unfamiliar with the paperwork that businesses have to deal with, I'll give you a simple example. I have my own home business. I normally don't sell to large companies, especially now that the American economy is deteriorating, but when I do, they want me to fill out a W-9 form. It's a very simple form in which I specify my name and address and either a Social Security number or a federal ID number, and then I sign it and put the date on it. Every company that does business with me wants me to provide them with a copy of this form, and every few years they want me to send them a new copy just in case some of the information changed. If I was dealing with hundreds of businesses every year, I would be sending out hundreds of these forms every year. The government wants businesses to keep these forms in storage, so there must be millions of these forms all over America in filing cabinets. Why does every business need to keep their own copy? These forms are not stopping bad behavior. Instead, they're wasting time and resources. And this is just one simple form that businesses have to deal with. There are millions of people in government and businesses that are working hard on paperwork, but none of these people are actually doing anything of value for society. Their paperwork is supposed to be controlling bad behavior, but it's only wasting resources. All of the time that people waste on this paperwork could have been spent on something more useful. But in order to get rid of this paperwork, we have to change our attitudes on why businessmen behave in a selfish manner. We have to stop believing that we can correct bad behavior with punishments and paperwork. We have to face the fact that businessmen who behave in selfish manners are doing so because they want to. And we have to face the fact that some people are better behaved than others. When a businessman or anybody in a leadership position misbehaves, he should be removed from his position and never allowed into leadership again. He should not be given a second chance. There's no reason to believe that his brain will somehow rewire itself and become less childlike. The same concept applies to the employees of a business. They're not going to be cured of their bad behavior with jails or paperwork. This concept also applies to the businessmen who are responsible to the design of our cities. In Santa Barbara, California, where I live, the highway and railroad pass through the center of the city. There are lots of expensive homes on both sides of the highway and railroad tracks. I don't understand how people living next to the railroad tracks can sleep through the night when the train goes by, especially when it honks its horn. There's no reason that homes have to be built next to noisy and filthy roads, airports, or industries. There's no reason that electric power lines have to dangle from wooden poles that blow down during ordinary storms. We could design attractive cities that are capable of dealing with the weather, and which allow us to walk around even on rainy days. However, the men who are dominating our real estate businesses are concerned with their own personal profit, not with society. They don't care if the homes they build are miserable places to live, because they won't live in those homes. This is selfishness, and we're not going to fix this problem with zoning laws or consumer groups. We have to face the fact that these men made a decision to behave in this selfish manner. We have to stop making excuses for their terrible behavior and get better people in control of our cities. As technology becomes more advanced, our primitive free enterprise system becomes increasingly inefficient and corrupt. We need to take into account what we've learned about human behavior, economic issues, organized crime gangs, bribery, and other issues, and design an economic system that's more appropriate for our technically advanced era. The insurance business is another example. The people in the Middle Ages didn't buy insurance for their home, their health, or their life. In that era, everybody had to take care of themselves and plan for their future. The concept of insurance makes a lot of sense, and as a result, a lot of companies developed during the past centuries to provide us with various types of insurance. It's entirely possible for a man to start an insurance company and be honest with his customers. And it's possible for his customers to file honest insurance claims when they truly deserve to receive insurance money. However, the only people who are honest are the people who want to be honest. And the history of the insurance business shows that a lot of people who are attracted to this business are not interested in honesty. And a lot of their customers are not interested either. A good example are the insurance companies that gave billions of dollars to Larry Silverstein for the September 11th attack. The insurance companies are obviously dominated by people who don't care that the buildings were blown up with explosives. The people in the insurance business and their customers are frequently caught trying to cheat one another. We have to stop making excuses for these people. They're cheating because they see an opportunity to cheat, and they decided to take that opportunity. Nobody needs any special skills, talent, or intelligence to run an insurance business. And even less talent is needed to file a false insurance claim. Therefore, the insurance businesses are an easy way to make money, and this is why it attracts so many people who are childish, stupid, mentally ill, and selfish. Our free enterprise system assumes that businessmen will produce products that compete with other products. But insurance is not really a product that can compete in the marketplace. Insurance is similar to Social Security and school systems. These type of services should be handled by the government, not by businessmen who are trying to make a profit. A lot of people will respond that public schools are worse than private schools. So let me explain why our public schools are crummy. A school is just a group of people and some buildings, desks, and other material items. The school is whatever those people make it. If we select dishonest or psychotic people for the school, then the school will be miserable. Whether a school is good or bad depends upon the people in the school. It has nothing to do with whether the school is public or private. The only difference between a public school and a private school is that the people in the public school are selected by the government, and the government has been selected by the voters, and most of the voters are incompetent. Furthermore, there are Zionists within our government who are deliberately sabotaging our schools. As I mentioned earlier, Arthur Schlesinger influences the videos in our public schools and libraries. Our public schools are crummy partly because of Jews like him, not because the schools are public. If we had better voters, we could create a better government, and that better government would be able to create better schools. And it would also be able to do a better job of providing retirement plans, insurance, city planning, and transportation systems. And if we had policemen who could resist bribes, then we would have less problem with organized crime and Zionism. Our problems are not coming from the government, it's coming from the people. Most people can't even face the fact that Zionist Jews blew up the World Trade Center buildings, or that the Jews are lying about the Holocaust, or that Israel deliberately attacked the USS Liberty in 1967. How are we going to have good public schools when these incompetent, childish, selfish, and easily frightened people are in control of our nation? The government doesn't have to be corrupt or inefficient. A government is just a group of people. It's entirely possible to set up a government that has respectable people in it. But how are we going to get a better group of people in government when we have a democracy? We have to give up these fantasies of democracies, Marxism, and anarchy, and develop a better system of selecting government leaders. We've got to learn from the mistakes of the past rather than pretend that we can fix our primitive system. Our government, schools, and economy is whatever we make it. If we put better people in control of our society, then we can have a better world. But this requires we change our attitudes towards people. It requires that we face the fact that there are differences between our minds, and that we're not going to transform the badly behaved people into good people by threatening them with punishments. Our primitive economic system is concerned only with profit, It has no provisions for providing us with respectable business leaders or dealing with crime. As a result, it's easy for crime to flourish in this economy, and it's easy for Zionist gangs to operate profitable businesses. And there are no provisions to stop them from exploiting consumers. For example, after the 9/11 attack occurred, a group of people in New York City started the organization called Here is New York. They sold individual photos of the 9/11 attack for the absurd price of $25. They justified the high price by claiming that they're raising money for the children of the victims of the attack. One woman was so impressed with this organization that she gave them $23,000. However, I think the people operating this organization are Zionists, and their true goal was to maintain a high level of anger towards the Arabs. The people who donated money to them, or who purchased their photographs, think of themselves as wonderful people who helped the children of the victims. But I think they actually helped the Zionist crime network that killed the parents of those children. This brings up the issue of businesses that offer to donate a small amount of money to a charity if we buy their product. Most people think of this as an acceptable business practice, but it's just another deceptive and diabolical trick. It's abuse. Imagine two football teams are playing a game, and one team announces that every time they score a goal, they'll give some money to a charity. And imagine some of the referees deciding that this is a great opportunity to donate to a charity, so they help the team to score goals. You would certainly be appalled that the referees were such suckers that they would become victims of this trick, and you would be disgusted with the football team for using this gimmick. But what would happen if nobody complained about this practice? The likely result would be that the other football teams would become annoyed that they're being cheated, and some of them might come up with gimmicks of their own to compensate. For example, one football team might offer the referees a trip to Hawaii if they win the game. Or imagine that you're running a bakery business in the Middle Ages, and your competitor raises his prices slightly and tells people that when they buy a loaf of bread from him, a small amount of money will go to a charitable organization. Would you consider him to be competing with you in a fair manner? Our economy is dominated by men who are selfish and abusive. They look for ways to exploit us. They're not looking for ways to make life better. A lot of their advertising programs are abusive and disgusting, but the majority of people don't realize that they're being abused. As a result, consumers are doing nothing to stop the abuse. And that puts pressure on the other businessmen to do something to compensate. We can see this problem with advertisements. At one extreme are the men who want to provide us with serious information about their products so that we can make an intelligent decision, and at the other extreme are people whose only purpose for advertising is to sell a product and make a profit. If all businessmen were respectable, then all of the advertisements would have serious information, and they would be very useful to us. But those type of businessmen lose sales to the men who manipulate consumers with sexual titillation or endorsements by Hollywood stars. The end result is that the respectable businessmen are under pressure to run similar advertisements. For example, Bob Parsons, who started the GoDaddy Internet service provider, created advertisements for the Super Bowl football games in which he used sexual titillation to advertise his web hosting service. Supposedly, the technique worked so well that he had a dramatic increase in customers after the ad was shown on television. Should his competition compensate by running their own sexually titillating advertisements? And do we want businesses to be treating us in this manner? How extreme does this type of manipulation have to be before people complain about it? How about if Bob Parsons told us that if we signed up for his GoDaddy internet service, he would pay one of those Israeli children who wrote messages on the bombs during Israelis' bombing of Lebanon, to write a message for us and have an Arab killed in our name. Would you say that is going too far with the advertising gimmicks? I'm sure Bob Parsons would respond that all of these are valid advertising methods, but there's no right or wrong to these issues. This is an issue of what do we want our society to be? Do we want businessmen competing to manipulate our emotions? Or do we want them competing to make a better society? Bob Parsons and the other people have chosen to manipulate our emotions. They made this decision because it's their personality. And we should ask ourselves, do we want people like this dominating our economy? Do we want businessmen who spend their time trying to manipulate us? Or do we want businessmen who spend their time trying to make society a better place? You may wonder why I selected Bob Parsons to complain about. It's because I'm having a rather bizarre dispute with GoDaddy at the moment, and I was wondering why this company is behaving in such a strange manner. Then, I recently noticed that GoDaddy is the company that ran the sexually titillating advertisements on television. Perhaps the reason I ended up in this strange dispute with them is because the company is dominated by selfish people who consider us animals to exploit. However, I'll explain this dispute in a separate page at my website rather than talk about it now. Another problem with our free enterprise system is that it doesn't handle groups of people who discriminate against other groups. If you've ever been to 47th Street in New York City, then you've noticed that the diamond business on that street employs only a certain type of Orthodox Jew. Those Jews discriminate against everybody else, even other Jews. If any other race or religion was dominating a particular industry and discriminating against other people to that extent, people would complain about them. But the Jews get away with this because they claim that they've been victims of the mysterious anti-Semites for thousands of years, and therefore they deserve to behave in a selfish manner for the next few thousand years. Our free enterprise system was never designed to deal with the possibility that a large group of people would organize and discriminate against us in order to take control of the media, school system, economy, and government. Jews often defend their bad behavior on the grounds that Jews have been discriminated against for 6,000 years. But the Jews have chosen to behave in a bad manner, and they're using anti-Semitism as an excuse for their horrible behavior. Don't fall for their tricks. When a Jew behaves badly, it's because he wants to. It's not because his ancestors were discriminated against by mysterious anti-Semites. Most of us grew up listening to Jews telling us sad stories about how they've been suffering abuse for 6,000 years. But recently I've been wondering, where in history can we find an actual case of a society that has abused Jews? When I look at history, I only see people reacting to the bad behavior of Jews. I don't see any actual abuse. For example, the Jews complained that they were thrown out of Spain 500 years ago. But before they were thrown out, the Spanish people were treating them with the same decency and respect that they treated everybody else. The Spanish people never abused the Jews. Rather, the Jews abused the Spanish people, and eventually the Spanish people got tired of it. The pattern I see all throughout history is that every society treated Jews with decency and respect, but after a while that society got tired of the abuse, lies, crimes, murders, and other horrible behavior of Jews. Then that society threw them out, and the society that accepted them treated them with decency. And after a while, they also got tired of the abuse. And look at the behavior of Jews during the 20th century. It's the same pattern. For example, the Germans treated the Jews with decency and respect, but the Jews decided to abuse the Germans. When did the Germans ever abuse the Jews? The American people also treated the Jews with decency, and look what they did to us. The Chinese and Japanese never abused the Jews either. But the Jews manipulated the Japanese into World War II, and the Jews manipulated the Americans into attacking Japan, and the Jews manipulated the Americans into dropping nuclear bombs on Japan. Some American military personnel complained that American prisoners of war in Vietnam and Korea were deliberately abandoned, and that some prisoners were sent to Russia for medical experiments. And there are complaints from Americans that it sometimes seemed that the enemy knew exactly what they were planning to do and were waiting for them, as if they were spies inside the American military. There is overwhelming evidence that the Zionist Jews arranged for the wars of the 20th century and the slaughters in Russia and China under the communists and the wars in the Middle East. The Zionist Jews tricked all of these nations into destroying themselves and one another. And look at what Eisenhower did to the German prisoners after World War II was over. He tricked Americans into killing more than 1 million German prisoners rather than release the prisoners. People have also treated the Rothschilds, the Bronfmans, Steven Spielberg, Larry Silverstein, Wolf Blitzer, Naomi Wolf, and Barbara Streisand with decency and respect, but in return they lie to us, they cheat us, they deceive us. Ever since the 9/11 attack occurred, people have been using the internet to look at historical events and people, and we've uncovered a lot of evidence that the Zionist Jews are committing a lot of crimes. But what are the chances that we've uncovered every crime the Zionists have committed? It's very likely that we're going to continue uncovering their crimes, and that we're going to discover that these people are more abusive and disgusting than we realize. The other day I posted a couple links to articles that somebody from Europe sent me about Jewish leaders setting up Jewish councils during World War II in the Nazi-occupied territories. These Jewish councils were supposed to be helping the Jews, but they appear to have been Zionist organizations, and their purpose was to get access to Jews so that the Zionists could decide which Jews they wanted to send to Palestine or Sweden or other countries, and which ones they wanted to send to the prison camps. And of course, when a Jew was sent to a prison camp, the Jewish councils would tell the other Jews that the Nazis were responsible. Many people in Europe and Russia must have a lot of important information about the Jews, but when somebody exposes Jewish crimes, he's accused of spreading hatred or denying the Holocaust. And look at how the Jews treat one another. The homeland of these Khazarian Jews is near the Caspian Sea, around Chechnya, Georgia, the Ukraine, and Turkey. If these people were truly better than the rest of us, then the areas that are full of Khazars would be the best places to live. But it seems to be the exact opposite. The areas that are full of Khazars seem to be full of crime, abuse, corruption, disgusting behavior, and violence. They can't blame these horrible qualities on anti-Semitism because they dominate the area. The only way to explain it is that this is the Khazarian mind. This is the Khazarian personality, and this would explain why they don't even enjoy living with their own kind. They would rather live among us. We treat them with decency and respect. We treat them better than they treat one another. The only Jews who want to live around one another are the Orthodox Jews, and that brings up another interesting issue. Christopher John Bjerknes, who admits to being at least partly Jewish, tries to convince us that those Orthodox Jews are the primary group responsible for the world's problems. I think he's trying to shift the blame to the Orthodox Jews so that the other Jews can pretend to be innocent victims. The Orthodox Jews may be involved in lots of crimes, but there's no evidence that they're the primary group behind the world's problems. The Jews boast that they're more intelligent than other people, but even if that's true, so what? Imagine if mosquitoes were more intelligent than the average human. Would that justify letting them suck your blood? An intelligent criminal isn't better than a dumb criminal. Actually, intelligent criminals are more dangerous because they're better at committing crimes. Furthermore, the more I learn about Jews, the more I realize that the theory that Jews are better than us is just another Jewish hoax. It's possible that the Jews are better in certain mental or physical tasks, such as mathematics or music, but their personalities are disgusting. Their success in dominating America and Europe is coming from murder, deception, bribery, blackmail, and threats, not from any wonderful quality. Another important reason that the Jews are so successful in dominating us is that most people can't believe the stories about their behavior. For example, tell people that I think Christopher Bolin and his family have been kidnapped by Jews, and that his children have probably been sold as sex slaves or killed. Most people would respond that I'm crazy. But where is the Bolin family? And where are his children? The Jews are getting away with a lot of their crimes partly because most people can't believe that a group of humans would behave in such a manner. But maybe they're not the same type of human as the rest of us. The Jews claim to be a different race, and they may be correct. We have to get rid of this Zionist crime network. This requires that the police and military stop feeling sorry for Jews and start facing the fact that Jews are responsible for their criminal and disgusting behavior. The Jews are lying about 9/11 because they want to, not because they were discriminated against for 6,000 years. The Jews lie about the Holocaust because they want to, and they attacked the USS Liberty because they wanted to. Some people will complain that I'm being harsh on Jews, but we're not going to solve this problem by making excuses for their behavior. We have to stand up to them. Don't be intimidated by them. They are the ones behaving in a disgusting manner, not us. We're simply describing what we see when we complain about them. All throughout history, people have been treating the Jews with decency and respect, and all throughout history, people have been eventually getting fed up with their horrible behavior. This reaction isn't due to some mysterious anti-Semitism. Rather, it's because people grow tired of their disgusting behavior. We have to stop letting them fool us into feeling guilty for being disgusted with them. We're not bad people because we feel disgust towards them. This is a natural reaction when people discover that they've been abused and cheated and tricked into wars. If the Jews had been nicely behaved people, we would love them. It's their own fault that we're disgusted with them. Well, I've talked for about 80 minutes, which is all you can get onto an audio CD. So for those of you who are making CDs of my talks, I'll quit and continue this discussion about the economy some other time. But since this is Holocaust Memorial Day, let's not forget the past. Let's remember how the Jews arranged for the World Wars and the Holocaust, and then lied about it all, and blamed it on the Germans. Let's imagine what the 20th century might have been like if the Jews hadn't instigated all of these wars and terrorist attacks. Let's imagine a world without these disgusting people. Until the next time, bye.